It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Lars. Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday night, and some great news coming. If you were worried about having some of those Donald Trump promises fulfilled, well, here's one. The president is going to announce, has not yet, but the hints seem to be there, that he will pull America out of the Paris Climate Agreement, which is really a treaty which President Obama, before him, decided to try to, you know, maneuver the United States into. Even though the Constitution is very clear about what you have to do with treaties, the president cannot on his own sign a treaty. He has to bring the treaty back, and it has to be voted on by the United States Senate, and it has to receive a two-thirds vote. Otherwise, it does not become a treaty that America has signed on to. So President Obama invented a brand new form called an agreement that only he had to say yes to, and not the rest of us. And the problem is, treaties like this really are a challenge to a country, because the country is essentially signing away for a good long time, maybe forever, the rights of some of its citizens by agreeing that we will go with an agreement that the entire country will be bound by, that it can change what goes on inside our country at the whim of some of those outside our country. That's why the founders of this country said that has to be voted on by the Senate and it needs a two-thirds vote. Well, Trump and his team will design an exit strategy that will work well for the American people, and we will be better off because of it, not taking part in this charade that somehow pollution on planet Earth is entirely the fault of the United States, and we should be held to ridiculous standards. Let me give you an idea of how ridiculous it is. What's the benchmark for the Paris Climate Agreement? Here's what Obama promised. And remember, this thing only went into effect November the 4th of last year. Okay? That's when it actually went into effect as an agreement, even though it had never been submitted to the United States Senate. It promised that the United States would reduce its overall emissions, primarily of carbon dioxide, to 25% below. Below what? Below today's emissions? No. Below the emissions of 2005, 12 years ago. So we're supposed to go back and tell everyone who generates CO2, and that would be power companies, that would be automobiles, that would be every single thing you do. When you go to the thermostat tonight, if it's chilly where you are, and you turn the thermostat up and you're burning, say, natural gas, or in some cases, coal-fired electricity, that you're supposed to reduce the amount of CO2 to 25% below the 2005 levels, and that in five-year increments going on into the future, we will continue to reduce the amount of pollution we put out. Who is not held to that agreement? Well, that would be China, India, Mexico, and other major polluters that pollute much worse than we do. You want to make a big improvement in the global climate and the global emissions of pollution? Get China to get just to the level we're at today. Get Mexico to do the same. I've never been to Mexico City, but reading about the air down there, I don't want to go to Mexico City because the place is polluted as all get out. So get them to stop their pollution. And let the United States decide to do what is best for the American people. Should your place of work have to give you leave for abuse in your personal life? One province has passed a law that does just that. Will others follow suit? And certain news outlets like to publish radical headlines as clickbait. Recently, it's been Donald Trump impeachment. Is that really just a new model to gain ad revenue for a struggling industry? Summer is just around the corner, a few weeks away, and teenagers are looking for part-time work, but the usual retail gigs are quickly disappearing. I'll give you the details on why the brick-and-mortar stores are closing at such a fast rate and why the higher minimum wage, and Illinois is right on the cusp of passing a $15 minimum wage. Their current minimum wage is $8.25, and they want to jump it almost 100% to $15. Can you imagine? You're running a small store, and you look at your books, and most small business people are running on margins of 8 or 10%. That means when you spend $100 in their store, the store owner makes $8 to $10, and you're going to tell them that their labor costs are about to double, and you think they're going to keep the same number of employees on at the same number of hours at a nearly doubled rate? Do the math on that one and see how it works out. And when you say, well, just pass it on to your customers, sure. If labor costs are one-third of the sandwich I'm about to buy at the Subway sandwich store and you have to double them, tell me that when the $8 sandwich goes to $11, you're going to sell just as many sandwiches to those customers. You know it's not true. Our quick poll tonight, should President Trump pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement? I would say yes to that. You're welcome to vote no if you choose to. Our quick poll can be found at LarsLarson.com and is brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens, the kind of conservative values I subscribe to. Just go to amac.us or call 888-262-2006. AMAC's better, better for you and better for America. In yesterday's quick poll, here's what I asked you. Should we end the filibuster, as President Trump suggests, and let bills pass the U.S. Senate by a simple majority vote? 85% of you said yes to that idea, and I voted with you. 15% of you said no. And while you're at the website, visit my trophy room at LarsLarson.com. Post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing trip, and you get the chance to win some fantastic prizes. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Lars Larson Show. On Facebook, it's The Lars Larson Show. I want to tell you something. This business about the Paris Climate Agreement, this seems like such an easy decision. And I have a feeling that tomorrow or the day after, we're going to hear from the president. I would expect it's going to be tomorrow that we're going to hear that the president has made the decision, he'll announce it, and we're going to be out of Paris. Good. This ridiculous agreement that President Obama put in place through an extra constitutional method of simply calling a treaty not a treaty so that he alone would have to sign off on it. If we lived in a third world dictatorship, he could probably do that. We live in a constitutional republic. He cannot do that. The New York Post reporting tonight, the president met with EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt yesterday. He and a small team of advisors are working out details of when and how the United States will step away from the 2015 agreement. Pruitt and his team are considering either a full formal withdrawal, a process that could take 3 years, or a clean break. You know what? I vote for the clean break. I vote for us to get out and pack things up and leave the Paris Agreement right now and send the rest of the world a message that says the United States is already a clean producer of power and a clean user of energy. When the rest of you catch up with us, maybe you'll have something to talk about. Relief Factor is a 100% research-based formula created to help combat the root causes of inflammation. Inflammation can cause you some real aches and pains. That's the body's natural inflammatory response function that can cause aches and pains from exercise, overexertion, aging, and just plain old everyday living. Jody from Ohio writes in, I clean for a living, and I'm very active. I was having joint and muscle aches. I started taking Relief Factor. It's helped me immensely. I'm telling everybody about Relief Factor. Pain in America affects about 100 million Americans. Just from everyday living, aches and pains, well, and exercise will do it too. Relief Factor helps exercise-related pain or just general muscle aches and pains. I'll tell you how to start. The three-week quick start. That's the way I got started a few years ago. $19.95, about 95 cents a day, less than the cost of a cup of coffee. For pain relief, visit ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com or call 1-800-500-8384. That's 1-800-500-8384. Coming up, as much as they bash him, President Trump has breathed new life into the liberal media and a nice boost to their bottom line. We'll talk about it with the MRC's Dan Gaynor coming up next on the Lars Larson Show.
Bring honestly provocative talk everywhere you go. Search iTunes for the Lars Larson Show podcast.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. I want to tell you something. President Trump said that he would make America great again, and it appears that even for some liberal media institutions, he's doing exactly that, although I would imagine CNN and MSNBC are not going to be as grateful openly as you might expect somebody to be. Dan Gaynor joins you now, the Vice President of Business and Culture at the Media Research Center. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back. It seems like every day is a busy media day now.
Even if all they're describing is whether the president had a misspelling in one of his tweets,
Yeah, they devoted 10 minutes this morning on this morning's news programs to that. And I know at least one of the networks tonight used it. But Trump is a gold mine to the media. They don't want to admit this, but basically put Trump in a headline, and particularly if you say something really crazy about him, well, then the left goes berserk. They've been pushing this impeachment line for weeks or maybe even months now because they wanted to get him impeached before he took office. And, of course, it's pushed by the crazy left, and it's also pushed by the crazy traditional media. And it means clicks. It means viewers. It means money.
Well, and there's nothing to hold them back from doing that, is there? Because they can always say, well, some folks are advocating for his impeachment. And by some folks, they mean the usual loons who are around who will say this stuff, even though there's no firestorm, and there would have to be a firestorm to impeach any American president. I told people that all the way through Obama. You know, you want to get it done, you better get people angry enough that they'll tell their members of Congress to vote for articles of impeachment in the House, and it's not likely. And I told that during Obama when I thought there was an honest case for impeachment. They've been trying to get Trump impeached since before he took the office.
Yes, they would have gotten him impeached before the election if they could have managed it. But see, there's no downside for the media outlets because they're in the world now where anything they say about Trump is okay to them. They can make fun of a typo, even though their news organizations are filled with typos. They can make fun of his kids. Somebody mocking a possible decapitation of Trump to be a bridge too far. And even then, it took CNN a day before they were willing to cut Kathy Griffin loose. But this is because this means so much money to them. Their ratings are off the charts. The late night shows, which are mostly gone insane to attack Trump, they are now doing well in ratings. Even the lefty nonprofits like ProPublica and others have had funding increase because, of course, all they have to do is put in a fundraising letter, Trump. And the left is like Pavlov's dogs. They run through the maze and they hand over their wallets.
Well, we mentioned Kathy Griffin last night, and I've also talked about it a bit tonight. Do you know the thing I haven't heard anybody discuss? To me, I always saw a fair amount of concern by the mainstream media, and especially the left-stream media, you know, on cable for the most part, CNN and MSNBC, with concern about the way that the Obama daughters would be treated and whether they were on limits or off limits during the entire, you know, both his campaign, his second campaign, and his time in office. Have you seen one piece on any of the networks expressing concern that a 10 or I think he's now an 11-year-old boy named Barron might be affected by seeing the image of his father's head cut off and any concern about his well-being, you know, as his father is attacked with that?
Yeah, no, of course not. And it's not surprising. They think that anybody associated with Trump, it's almost no holds barred. They're a little cautious around Melania because they think they can gradually push her away from Trump. And as they were saying on The View one day, they want her to divorce him. That would be a victory for them. It's it's
have they thought insane. About the likelihood of something like that? The two appear to be, you know, good partners in a marriage. I'm about to celebrate my 20th year of marriage, and you always have small disagreements, you know, with your spouse. But I don't see any of the major disagreements that you would expect to see coming up as, you know, if somebody was about to divorce. And how in the world can you hope openly that two happy people would divorce each other because you hate the husband?
Yeah, it shows how far they've gone, and that, and the Kathy Griffin thing, and almost countless other examples of the comments you get. Melania even responded to the Kathy Griffin thing because it was so horrendous. But it's the marketing of this that's so disturbing, because the media have put themselves in a position where the goofier and crazier they are, the better it works. You've seen the Washington Post. They've changed their motto now. It's democracy dies in darkness. And so it's this conspiratorial, scary, post-apocalyptic world that they've envisioned that Trump is, so that it gives an excuse to say anything and almost do anything in the form of journalism.
See, the thing that bothers me the most about that, Dan, you know that I'm a Trump partisan. I don't think everything he's done is right, but I think he's doing a good job. But during Obama, we stacked up the scandals that we still don't have answers for. HHS, EPA, Fast and Furious, IRS, you know, all of these honest-to-God legitimate scandals where the government was being used against people, even to the point of killing some people in the case of Fast and Furious. And I thought we had a lot of darkness during the Obama years because you couldn't pry any of this information loose from the Obama administration without a lawsuit from the folks at Judicial Watch. And the Washington Post adopts democracy will die in darkness after Trump takes office. That is lunacy.
Yeah, and like I said, it works for them because it makes them money. For years, I've watched, I follow the journalism industry real closely, and I've watched journalism spiral into the pit. While we had a great recession, journalism has had a depression, tens of thousands of jobs lost, but they finally found a business model. And their business model is to be virulently anti-Trump and to say all sorts of irresponsible things. It's all sorts of media. I've got Cosmopolitan on my phone right now. Just happened to notice this. 43% of Americans now want Trump impeached. That's the Cosmo headline. It's Cosmo, for goodness sake, and they're doing impeachment clickbait. There's no end to it.
But here's the downside to that kind of thing. It's like staging an event that draws a lot of attention to you, but like Kathy Griffin, costs you your career. When journalism realizes we're making a joke of ourselves by not telling both sides, because they could be telling both sides. When the whole media a week ago was running with a story about, or this weekend, running with a story about Jared Kushner and back channels, did anybody think to mention that Barack Obama used a back channel when he was still a candidate to set up meetings with Iran preparatory to an Iran deal that a lot of us think was a bad deal? Because in honest journalism, while one news outlet is saying, oh, this is the worst thing that ever happened, the other one can spike the first one by saying, oh, by the way, it's the same thing Obama did 8 years ago. So is it still the worst thing in the world or not? Except that I don't see journalists doing that anymore. I used to love to look at a competitor's story, go out and dig up the honest-to-God details and say, well, their story said this, but here's the part that's the counterpoint to all of that. And that was how journalism was healthy. You know, then you got both sides of it. This is a whole bunch of people who only want to tell one side of the story. Dan, I'm just glad you and the MRC are there to make sure we keep track of this. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks. It's always good to be on with you.
Glad to have you on. Dan Gaynor from the Media Research Center. Coming up, I hope you don't have a teenager in the house who's looking for a job this summer, because there is a real apocalypse coming at a lot of teenage job seekers, in part because of the dramatic increase in the minimum wage around America. We'll talk about that next on The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Warning.
Welcome back to
Right Winger Coming Through.
Lars Larson Show. Well, just about any place in America these days, they're talking about raising the minimum wage. And I know that for a lot of you, you say, well, I make the minimum wage or close to it. I can't wait for them to raise it. Well, here's the problem. As they raise the minimum wage, Seattle has done it very high. Oregon's done it. Washington's done it. Now, most recently, Illinois, right now, its legislature is in the middle of voting to raise its minimum wage, get this, from $8.25 an hour to $15 an hour. And what do you suppose is going to be the reaction of those business owners who only have so much money to spend on labor when they find out that their labor costs have just about doubled? Well, it's not only bad news for people already with jobs, but I imagine it's also bad news for people who are teenagers looking for a job this summer. Jordan Bruno joins me now, who's senior research analyst at the Employment Policies Institute. Jordan, good to have you back on the program. What should we make of these increases and what they're going to do to job prospects for teenagers this summer?
Hey, thanks for having me, Lars. Memorial Day was the unofficial start to summer, but for young people, there's really nothing to celebrate. So far this year, 3,500 retail stores have already closed, and 10 well-known retail chains have already filed for bankruptcy protection. This includes major names like Macy's, JCPenney, and Sears. Sears is noted it's on the verge of bankruptcy. Macy's and JCPenney have announced they're closing hundreds of stores. And, this is causing real pain for people looking for summer job opportunities. And, there are many, many reasons for this. But one major reason is the dramatic minimum wage increases that have put some of these low-margin small businesses out of business and put them at a competitive disadvantage to their online counterparts.
Boy, when I look at that number, 3,500 stores that you supplied for us, 3,500 stores times what? An average of 50 to 100 employees, or my average is off? Because if it were 100 employees each, you're talking about a third of a million jobs that might be staffed in those stores that are simply going to go away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the retail sector is a massive impact. One in nine jobs is a retail job in this country, and so that just shows kind of the importance this sector has overall. Market analysts predict 8,000 store closures on a full year basis. And yeah, that is, even if, depending on the average, that is, tens of thousands of jobs that teens have relied on and young workers have relied on for decades to pick up some summer job experience and help bolster their resume and pick up, frankly, more than just a paycheck, the soft skills that can help them kind of succeed throughout their careers.
You know, sometimes teenagers have a little bit of an advantage because if it's a seasonal job, an awful lot of adults want a full-time, year-round job. So if you match up the seasonal need of the employers with the seasonal need of the, of teenage, potential employees, it might work out well for them to match up. But if the employer now has to pay, for instance, if Illinois ends up seeing this bill signed by its governor, I can imagine a lot of employers saying, well, I'm going to have to cut my staff from, 6 to 4. I mean, even if they have a certain number of people on to get the functions done here at work,
right,
they're going to look for all the economies. And I can imagine a lot of jobs going from full-time 40 hours down to something less than that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, it's funny, we can look, and the proof is in the pudding, at these places that have already taken these dramatic steps. I was just talking to a small business in Seattle, and it has had to cut its headcount from 7 to 3. And the owner has had to increase the number of hours he personally works in the store from 20 hours a week to 60 hours a week.
That sounds like, so if you're thinking about a small deli shop that's associated with a big chain, I think of Subway right away.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll decide that's a big business, even though the individual, mom and pop that own that Subway sandwich store.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in fact, the U.S. government considers it a small business, the U.S. federal government, but because of the specific rules in the city council bill to encourage because they think that there's this advantage of branding But in reality, a franchise is just a small business with just a couple of employees, and that's treated as such under the U.S. government. So it's a real dichotomy here.
I'm talking to Jordan Bruneau, who's with the Employment Policies Institute. So what do you see as the sort of the near term and the long term on this? Is there a possibility that as these jurisdictions like Illinois or like Seattle and like other states that have raised their minimum wages, are they going to see that this is turning into a disaster for employees and maybe roll it back? Or do you see any chance of that at all?
You know, I mean, I think you see some carve-outs for youth minimum wages, maybe as a best-case scenario, some idea in the best of cases. But I think that is even optimistic. I mean, what we're just seeing now is not only anecdotal. I mean, the evidence is also empirical. I mean, you even have left-of-center economists saying these $15 minimum wages are extremely risky. What's happened now is you have fewer than one in three young Americans now hold a job, and that is significantly below the historical norm. And many markets across the country have youth unemployment rates that are above one third. And this is unprecedentedly high unemployment for this age group. And like we talked about earlier, I mean, this goes beyond just having a few extra dollars to spend on movies in the summer. You know, these are soft skills that young employees can learn, like punctuality, like a sense of urgency, that many studies show help them throughout their careers earn more than their counterparts without such early career work experience.
I mean, because it's one thing if you go in at 16 and start being told by the boss you need to show up on time, you need to be attentive to customer needs and all those things, or you wait until you're 19 or 20 before you start learning them. There may be a very different road for you down the path. And then I think about, they're talking about, well, there's constant talk about how do we make it easier for young people to get out and, say, access college. I know that there are kids who plan in the summertime, I'm going to go home, live in mom and dad's, and work at a job and sock away a few thousand bucks. Some of that opportunity may just flat go away.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And we're seeing that both anecdotally and empirically in the evidence that younger workers are just not working at the pace and the opportunities of previous generations, even a decade ago. I mean, it's one of the few indicators that hasn't really recovered from pre-recession levels is the youth unemployment rate. Or the youth employment rate, and it does have a major impact, especially with these sky high college tuition costs that you're trying to save for. I mean, not having, it's kind of a double whammy, right? You don't get the work experience that'll help you get a job later in your career to help you earn more, and then you also can't pocket away a few thousand dollars to help put towards tuition, which has increased at an astronomical pace over the last decade or so.
Jordan, is there any doubt in your mind that this is also going to accelerate the automation of places like some of the fast food chains that we've heard are beginning to buy ordering kiosks so they can knock out two or three employees who ordinarily take customer orders and tell the customer to punch their order into a machine instead?
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of a two-pronged thing on the automation. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, you have the automation of ordering kiosks, which all made like major restaurant chains, Chili's, Applebee's, Panera, Wendy's have announced and use tablet ordering systems, which I mean, research even shows that some customers like better because they don't interact with employees. And then on the other hand, in the more retail sector, it's really giving a competitive advantage to the Amazons, which, you know, as we've seen with the recent news coverage, they really don't need any more help. Their stock is at 1,000. It's one of the best market capitalization companies in the history of the world. And since they operate very leanly without labor costs, all these minimum wage increases do is put them at a further advantage to kind of our local main streets, our brick and mortar stores. They not only give these great job opportunities and work experience, but, you know, kind of make up the character of our towns and cities across the country.
Jordan, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for the work you do at the Employment Policies Institute, and thanks for the time today.
Thanks a lot for having me, Lars.
You bet. Jordan Bruno, who's a senior research analyst. I'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Oh. home to honestly provocative talk, The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you're a naysayer, you go right to the head of the line. If you want to send me an email, it's talk@LarsLarson.com. Follow me on Twitter at Lars Larson Show and on Facebook at The Lars Larson Show. We've been talking a bit today about a so-called comedian, Kathy Griffin, who's likely to get a visit from the Secret Service in the near future. She agreed to do a photo in which she is holding what appears to be the bloodied, severed head of the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Can you imagine, for example, if some, well, are there any right-wing comedians? Yeah, there are a few. Can you imagine if one of those during the Obama administration had done this same kind of gag? No, you can't imagine that, because if that had happened, that comedian would have got a quick visit from the Secret Service. On the phone with me right now is Doug Giles, who's founder and editor of ClashDaily.com and the author of some new books, including The Effeminization of the American Male and also a coloring book for college crybabies. Doug, good to have you back on the program.
Lars, what's shaking, big dog?
Well, Kathy Griffin, I think, is shaken because she realized that she took her entire career in her hands and decided to crumple it up and turn it into nothing. Perhaps she's already been canceled from CNN's New Year's Eve gig, which is still a good long ways away. And I have a feeling she may find some other cancellations as well. But can you imagine how many different people had to be involved for a professional photo shoot, making up the head, and then making the decision, yes, let's take that picture and let's release that to the internet where it will live on forever. And nobody stood up and said, this is really stupid and you're going to end up with no work?
Yeah, it was death by the own sword. Evidently, Lars, red hair coloring and silicone implants really clogs the synapses and makes you make some very, very bad career decisions.
Apparently so. And I wonder what she has such a serious expression on her face in that photo. I'm sure that most of America has seen it. If you haven't, just put in Kathy Griffin and it pops right up on the internet. The fact is, this is going to live on for a good long time. I think every time her name comes up, this is going to be mentioned. But it stuns me that there are people in the, you know, the entertainment business at that level who are that crazy that they thought this is going to be taken as a really good joke in these days of the Islamic State and a president who's come under fire from all sides.
Well, you know, the left, I'm surprised that she didn't get promoted to, you know, some kind of executive position at CNN. I tell people all the time, man, that the liberals can stand on the Pope nude and drink blood from a slit throat of a kitten while screaming the contents of Mein Kampf, and they will be hailed as zeitgeist, as poets of the new millennium, applauded. And I guarantee that even though she's taken a lot of heat from Chelsea Clinton, Mitt Romney, the rest of the planet, aside from ISIS, that there's people in Hollywood right now getting ready to throw her a big old party, Lars, for what she did. They love it. They agree with it. They've got CEOs from major corporations. There's all kinds of newscasters on the left and stuff that have called for his assassination.
It just seems
truly bizarre, brother. And I hope your audience, who lean kind of left, sees this kind of stuff. And so, you know, I might not understand conservatives, but I do understand crazy. And Kathy's nuttier than a squirrel turd.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think she's pretty crazy, and it just. Yeah, I'm just wondering, how far does Trump derangement syndrome go? Because remember when Donald Trump was first elected, in the days immediately afterward, we heard people saying all kinds of crazy things. And I thought, well, give him a couple of months. We'll get past Christmas and New Year's and they'll calm down a bit. It doesn't seem that they're all calming down. Some of them seem to be looking for new and more outrageous ways to show their concern or their angst at the election of a president that they didn't choose.
Now, Kathy put it on steroids, man. I mean, I've never really thought she was funny. I wasn't, you know, against her. I've just never been. I mean, she was like a, you know, the D-list comedian, as she hails herself, and that's a great moniker because she wasn't funny. The thing about this thing is that it wasn't funny. I've heard Nugent go off on Obama and Hillary, and it's funny. this is gross. It's distasteful. And I don't know if you remember this, Lars, but remember the rodeo clown that put on the Obama mask like 6 years ago?
Yeah.
He got canned like immediately. And Kathy Griffin goes full ISIS. And, you know, she did get canned by CNN. But bro, I'm telling you, man, I'd be blown away if she didn't get some Netflix special on freedom of expression or something. That's just how the left is. If they didn't have quadruple standards, they'd have no standards at all.
Well, I'll tell you what, I can echo that thought. I think you may be right that at some level, probably when a week or two has gone by, I'm sure that some on the left will say, there's Kathy Griffin, yet another victim of the Trump presidency, as the, you know, because she just couldn't help herself.
Yeah, and a bold, again, a bold, forthright, you know, freedom of expression. Nobody's going to stop her. I am woman. Hear me roar. You know, again, First Amendment troubadour. And it could be some of the greatest thing for a career decision for Kathy, for her side of the political aisle. She could become a hero, man. This could be her Rosa Parks moment, even though everybody with a lick of sense looks at that kind of garbage and say, lady, you didn't cross the line. You drove through it at 117 miles an hour.
And, Doug, I'm standing here in our studios in Portland, Oregon, where the mayor has tried to shut down free speech in reaction to a terrible event that happened last Friday that apparently had no connection at all to the, you know, the people who are organizing a free speech rally. We've actually got the left coming out full on against free speech and even just simply having a gathering in a public park. That's how crazy they've become.
Yeah, you get conservative speakers get booked for college campuses or commencement speeches, and the left goes apoplectic and they pop a vein in their forehead and stuff. However, again, when you know, Kathy Griffin does something like this, hooray, so heroic, go girl, go, and it's bizarre that the left, you know, who posit themselves as free thinkers and liberals and let the wackiest ideas on the planet have their way. When it comes to our freedoms, Lars, what we say that disagrees and checks them in the jaw with what they think is reality, they don't want us to yarble on about that kind of stuff. And I've learned this about the liberals, is that they don't mind what you do as long as they mandate it.
That's a good way of putting it. You want to remind people where they can find your work, Doug?
Yeah, The Effeminization of the American Male, Amazon.com, also our Mosh Pit. We went over 200 million page views, Lars, in the last 4 years.
At Clash Daily.
ClashDaily.com. So, yeah, we're killing it. And, oh, my gosh, do we have several pieces on Kathy Griffin that just completely trounce her. And, Lars, don't forget the little side shot she took at the very classy Melania Trump. She went after her in that video, too. Little secret, that her dress mocked Melania's dress. And I guarantee that Kathy Griffin, man, wish she had the style and substance of Melania Trump, our first lady.
You're absolutely right. Doug, thanks so much. Doug Giles is the founder and editor of Clash Daily. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.